Hey, it's the Chaos Queen here, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hey, it's Mistress Carrie, and you are listening to Studio 2009.
There is nothing wrong with your podcast player. Do not attempt to adjust the volume. Hello and welcome back into our studio. You are now inside Studio 2009, only on the Geekcast Radio Network. I am, of course, TF Joe and Mike. And joining me is the marvelously superior, uncanny, spectacular, it's Mr. Art Danner. Hello, sir. How are you?
Very good, sir. How are you today?
Pretty good, pretty good. Even though this isn't a Marvel movie episode, I had to throw in all that stuff just because. And folks, behind the scenes, we have recorded these out of order again, but it's okay. You're going to hear Art's gaming origins, his video game origins later, about four episodes from now in episode 98. So, but Art has already been here technically, so we're just going to go with that. And he is the only person that I've been able to find that would actually be willing
to subject themselves.
Oh, come on. It wasn't the worst thing you ever watched.
No, it is not the worst thing I have ever watched.
You've watched worse things than this. Come on now.
Yeah. I've seen Uwe Boll. I've seen most of Uwe Boll's movies. So yeah, I've seen way worse. So.
Why would you subject yourself to that kind of torture? Oh boy.
Sometimes you gotta test your tolerances for garbage. So.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, we're here celebrating the overall 30th anniversary of Need for Speed, the video game franchise that started in 1994. And what we are really here to talk about, though, is the film that they released 10 years ago in 2014. I could not believe that they made a Need for Speed film. I had been waiting years. So my Need for Speed history started in 1998 with Hot Pursuit, and then 2002 with Hot Pursuit 2. I like the cop games, obviously. I like the cops and robbers games, the cops and racers games. I don't do any of the pro street stuff or any of that kind of racing. Racing games like NASCAR type stuff, that's Gran Turismo for me. Like, that's not... Get that crap out of Need for Speed. We don't need that in Need for Speed. So those are the games that I really, really took to way back in those days. And then 2005, they released Most Wanted, which I think is one of the best Need for Speed games ever. And then in 2014, and I think, wasn't Breaking Bad still on then? Potentially. Again, I'm not looking it up right off the top of my head, but I believe Breaking Bad was on at that point, and Aaron Paul, it was announced that Aaron Paul was going to be the lead in the Need for Speed film, and I'm like, wait, what?
Breaking Bad actually ended
in 2014.
This was the first thing in 2013, and actually, so this was legitimately the first thing Aaron Paul did
after
Breaking Bad was done.
Wow, that's crazy.
They took everything from me. I do not fear, for you are with me. All those who defied me shall be ashamed and disgraced. Those who wage war against me shall perish. I will find strength, find guidance, and I will triumph.
Like, holy crap, Jesse Pinkman as a street racer. Like, oh my God.
Seemed like a total natural fit after coming out of that role.
I mean, yeah, I don't see how it wouldn't be considering. I mean, like, whew, that role, man, oh boy, that was rough for him. I guarantee you that was rough for him. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it was the first.
I mean, when you're coming off of a massive popular show, you go, hey, we need somebody to carry this vehicle of this franchise. Who better than Aaron Paul for a video game franchise video game movie?
And let's face it, and let's throw this out there, and let's just get all the marbles on the table. This isn't The Great Gatsby. This isn't, you know, Edgar Allan Poe. This isn't golden age of literature here, folks. This is simple storytelling.
This isn't even in the realm of something that would get nominated for a special effects.
Unfortunately not.
Yeah.
Unfortunately not. But it is very much in line with what a lot of the games are in the franchise. It has a lot of elements that you would see in the games as you're playing the games. It has a lot of the viewpoints that you would use in the games and that kind of thing. And that's why I love it. Now, I understand it has its flaws. Like I said, I know this is like these, like, guy gets framed for murder. Or goes down for manslaughter, technically. But, you know, I get it. And, you know, it's a hero's journey. It's a hero's rebirth, whatever, whatever, whatever. That story has been told over 100 years. So this is nothing new. But what I liked about this was all of the characters, the actors. Like, even though it's a really simple script, it's a really good bunch of characters, like between Finn and what's his name? I forget what the guy that drives Beast. I forget what his name is off the top of my head. I'll look at it in a minute.
Benny?
Yeah. No, not Benny. Benny's in the Cessna. The other guy.
I was going to say his crew is, it's Finn, Little Pete, and Benny.
I don't know. There's a fourth. No, there's a, no. Hold on. But yeah, I like the character moments in it.
He super stood out for me if I can't even remember that character.
I know, right? Joe Beastie Peck, a member of Toby. Yeah, played by Ramon Rodriguez. He's the guy. Yeah. He's the guy that drives Beast. And then there's Rami Malek as Finn. And then, unfortunately, Pete, who is Anita's brother, ends up dying. And look here, folks, this film is 10 years old. If you wanted to see it by now, you should have seen it by now. We are going to spoil the crap out of it.
Warning. So, the one thing that I loved about Little Pete's character is they spent so much time making him this super lovable, plucky person in like the first 20 minutes of the movie. And the moment like they started laying it on really thick with him being like that character type, I go, wow, he's the one who dies that creates all of, like, it was one of those, like, immediately I was like, okay, he's dying. Like, he's going to be the catalyst for all this, of whatever the drama is in the movie. So it was one of those, like, oh man, it was, I'm sorry, there were some themes in this movie that were telegraphed awfully, awfully hard. I mean, much like James Cameron's Avatar, there's nothing special about the story at all.
No, I mean, I flat out admit that. I like, just because I like this movie doesn't mean I don't see its flaws. I see its flaws, but for me, like, there's nothing more annoying to me in movies than an overcomplicated story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have, like...
Oh, there's definitely nothing complicated about the story.
No. It's very simple. It's very straightforward. There's not even really any real twists. I mean, even when, like, you see him call Anita when she meets him at the bridge and whatever. So, like, that's not even a twist or anything. No, you see it coming a mile away. Still enjoyed it, though. Whereas some other films that may have an overcomplicated, do I really have to watch that 3-hour movie again to enjoy Penguin? Please tell me I don't have to watch that 3-hour movie again. I didn't dislike The Batman. It was just too fucking long.
See, I like a long movie if it doesn't feel like a long movie.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And I didn't find The Batman to feel like a long movie. I enjoyed the world that they built. I enjoyed the feel of it. I enjoyed when you saturate a world in just like the narrative is very distinct and the entire world is saturated in that. I dig it. Like, I like world building. I like things like that. But
yeah.
Need for Speed had none of that. So, I was like, the one thing that I will say that I think stood out as, I mean, always start with saying something nice. The supporting cast, I think, was way more talented than it should needed to be for a movie of this caliber. And anything I see Rami Malek in, I love. Like, Rami Malek's just, dude's amazing. Love him in everything he's in. I was a huge Mr. Robot fan. I really enjoy him, and I've enjoyed to see his growth in the industry as an actor. And I was honestly super surprised when I started this movie that he was in this movie because I had no idea going into it.
Really? You didn't know he was?
The only thing I knew about this movie is that Aaron Paul was in it. That was literally, that is all I remembered. I was working at a movie theater, I believe, when this came out.
Oh, maybe, wow.
Or this was towards the end of when I was working at a movie theater. But the only thing I remembered was that Aaron Paul was in this movie. That was it. And I knew it was Need for Speed. And I think I blocked everything else out of my mind. So it was one of those, like, when I saw Rami Malek, I was like, holy crap, Rami Malek's in this. And then when Michael Keaton popped up, I was like, Michael Keaton's. So I was like,
oh my God. So here's the thing. Like, this is what got me wanting, besides all the promotional material that they did for Mr. Robot leading up to its debut, this is the film that introduced me to Rami Malek. This is the film that made me go check out Mr. Robot. Because of his performance in this. And then you have Marvel versus DC in this film. Because Dominic Cooper was Howard Stark. And Michael Keaton, I mean, come on. Do we even have to say it? He was the goddamn Batman. And he is the goddamn Batman at this point. Now that, unfortunately, Kevin Conroy passed away 2 years ago. Like, oh man. And that was the other thing. This whole character of the monarch, this recluse, this person who has a heart problem, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, this is 2014. DC wasn't doing it. The B, and literally Michael Powers, Steve Megatron, and I always used to say this, the BS that is BVS didn't happen until 2016. So there was no, and I even looked this up, there was no Batman DC stuff going on in 2014. The only superhero stuff that was going on in 2014 was Captain America, The Winter Soldier, Amazing Spider-Man 2, X-Men Days of Future Past, and Guardians of the Galaxy. That was it. Okay? So when I saw Howard Stark in this, I'm like, Howard Stark is a villain? Oh my god. And that just goes to show you how great of an actor Dominic Cooper is. But the whole Michael Keaton thing, I'm like, that's freaking, even though they call him the Monarch, that's Bruce Wayne running an illegal street race. For some odd reason, like, he's hung up his cape for a while. And it just every line Michael Keaton has in this movie is gold in my eyes.
Kids, I'm looking at something that I can't quite believe. I mean, my inbox is white hot. I got a bunch of trolls sending me footage of something that is mind-blowing. I'm looking at footage of a car that supposedly disappeared. It's the same car that Ford and Shelby were building when Carol died. I'm looking at a gorgeous ghost.
Yeah, no, I think that Michael Keaton is a strong standout. Mm-hmm. I think Michael Keaton's a strong standout, and the bickering and relationship between Finn, Ramon, and Benny, and yeah, then bantering, like, the three of them really, yeah, kind of, you know, yeah, I think we're those four cast members, I think, are by far the saving grace of this movie. It is all of them.
Yeah.
They make it enjoyable to watch. God, Dakota Johnson can't make paper interesting, can she? Like, she's just I was just like, holy crap, it's Madam Web. Not that I've seen Madam Web, because I just can't bring myself to watch it, but
oh my god, I didn't even notice that. Like, literally. Wow. Okay, so looking at her filmography, I can simply say I have Need for Speed is the only film I have ever seen. I am not a 50 Shades of Grey watcher.
So I'm married. I've seen all the 50.
you poor soul.
Oh, my wife dragged me to the theater. I've seen all of them in the theater. So it was like, she was in Social Network too, but. Don't remember her from Social Network, because she's got a very, yeah.
No, she wasn't.
I'm looking at her IMDb. She was in Bad Times at the El Royale, and I do love that movie. That movie is very good.
She wasn't in Social Network, I don't think. Oh, yeah, she was 2010. Oh, yeah, who the hell was Amy Ritter? Other than John Ritter's wife, Amy Yazbek. Who the hell... I don't even remember that character. Like, I've seen that movie so many damn times. I like that movie. It's probably the only time I actually really enjoy Facebook, watching that movie. Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Yeah, and her... Yeah, no, I... Oh, boy. Madam Web. Poor Joan Lee is rolling over in her grave. But no, this movie is just,
yeah, this is gonna be really nitpicky, and this is gonna sound really bad.
Okay.
I think Aaron Paul was fine. He was just okay. I basically felt like he was there to lead the movie and collect a paycheck. I wouldn't say there was anything, you know, massively amazing about his performance. He was right there, and he was there and he was believable. Imogen, that played Julia, however, I was ready for her to be in a car accident and be cut out of the cast at some point in time. And for some reason, I don't know what it was about her and her goddamn haircut. I don't know. Her hair, for some reason, her hair bothered me the entire time, and I don't know why. And like, by the end of it, I was like, I'm glad we're not seeing her on screen anymore. I can't look at her anymore. There's something weird about her haircut, and it just made it look like she was wearing a helmet. It just didn't the haircut didn't fit her head. It was very bizarre. And just for some reason, I couldn't move past it. It was very annoying to me. Not the only thing that was annoying to me in the movie, but one of the many things that was annoying. Well,
what else? Let's go. Keep going.
Can we talk about the piss poor covers of classic rock songs in the movie by the most heartless of covers from somebody I've never heard of before?
So I pulled this up on IMDb. I pulled up the soundtrack. We start with Allo Black's version of Fortunate Son, originally done by John Fogerty.
Awful. I'd love to rephrase that. Awful because of the cover. The original song, amazing. Terrible, which is amazing because it was so low on my radar of things that was awful as far as covers in the soundtrack, because the Back in the Saddle Again cover that's done during a great scene with Rami Malek, but it just is such a lackluster version of it that's playing during that entire scene. And it literally took me out of how funny that scene was.
That scene is, it's the scene where he's like, oh, okay, I'll be down in a minute. And he's stripping through his whole office, so he won't come back to that light, the corporate office space lifestyle type of thing. And Allo Black performed this cover of Back in the Saddle by Aerosmith. I'm like, for half a second, I was hoping, when I first heard the notes, I'm like, ooh, they got some money. They paid the real artist.
They did not.
And I'm sure Allo Black is a decent enough artist. He's not somebody that I listen to all the time, whatever. Actually, I think this is the only time I've ever heard any of his music. How did you... So you don't like these covers. I'm afraid to ask how you feel about Jamie N. Commons' version of All Along in the Watchtower.
Oh, it was shit. Straight shit. Like, horrible garbage. I was like, I'm not even a big fan of the. I mean, like, I like the Jimi Hendrix version. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Yeah,
like,
it's
classic. Amazing. But good God, it is just... If Back to the Saddle cover by Allo Black wasn't as bad as it was, I probably would have hated All Along the Watchtower more. But All Along the Watchtower was bad, but the Back in the Saddle cover was worse. But yeah, the music soundtrack on this did nothing for me. I will say, to preface this, literally the day before, or 2 days before I watched this, I sat down and watched The Craft, which may have one of the best
soundtracks,
like, 90s style soundtracks that's out there. So literally, it could have been the fact that I came off of like one of the greatest 90s soundtracks for a film to this train wreck of a soundtrack. That could be it. Yeah. But yeah, the music in this was just garbo. Like, it was one of those. They clearly spent all their money on Aaron Paul.
Oh, and on Michael
Keaton, and that was it.
Yeah,
because they did not spend a whole lot, and they probably cast Kid Cudi just because they wanted him to get on the soundtrack.
Probably, yeah.
So they didn't have to. It was probably a part of his payment deal was having a song on the soundtrack.
So this is DreamWorks Pictures, Reliance Entertainment, and Electronic Arts. Obviously, Electronic Arts owns Need for Speed, yada, yada, yada. The budget on this was $66 million, and it made $203.3 million. Okay, so you got $66 million, and like we said, we know. Michael Keaton, Aaron Paul, Kid Cudi, those are probably the three biggest gets for your cast, but like... The Need for Speed franchise is known for having licensed music, like actual licensed music by the actual artists in it. And what's so weird about having Allo Black cover the songs that he covers, you got Linkin Park with Roads Untraveled, which you and I completely disagree because you say it's a horrible song. I love that. It's one of my favorite Linkin Park songs of all time.
future.
Put your hand now.
Weep not for paths left alone, 'cause beyond every bend is a long blinding end. It's the worst kind of pain I've known.
I don't think that it matched the scene that was going on, and maybe, I mean, our opinions could be differing. I just didn't feel it. I don't know. It just didn't. It did not strike a chord in me at all. And honestly, never heard that song until watching this movie.
See, like, the last time, between 2014 and going back to, let's say, wasn't Meteora 2003, the album? I think Meteora was 2003. I could be wrong about that. But anyway, it had been a long-ass time since I had heard a Linkin Park song. Well, technically, it hadn't been that long. It was about 7 years, because in 2007 they did What I've Done for the Transformers movies.
I was going to say
every time
a Transformers movie came out. What are you talking about?
Well, you never know. But no, I heard that and I was like, oh, cool. That's awesome. It may kind of matches the scene where he's driving away from the crashed villain car, and then he goes back and blah, 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 and then all along the Watchtower comes in and whatever else. And I don't know. I see the flaws, but even with the flaws, I still love this thing.
Meteora was 2003.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I haven't thought about that album forever.
So I get snapping up IPs. I get making movies.
Yep.
But who in their right mind goes, you know what we should make a movie of? We should make a movie of Need for Speed, where the main essence of Need for Speed is driving, customizing your cars, and street racing and music and kind of street culture and the racing culture and things like that.
Yeah.
None of those games are known for their narrative. None of them are known for storytelling. And all you're going to take a movie and take all the things that makes the game great, and you're going to put a narrative in front of them, and you're going to kind of phone in some of the racing. Because, no offense, the racing stuff was not the most dynamically shot stuff that I've seen for a racing movie. I've seen,
oh yeah,
way better shots. They did a really good job of doing locales,
yeah,
and kind of capturing locales. And probably the best part of the entire movie was probably the Ford Mustang race they did in the city,
yes,
when they were chasing the cops. I think it was probably by far the best sequence in the movie.
I would say that and the drop off when Benny shows up in the Apache.
Yep.
That was cool as hell. Because that was a moment where those two characters got to basically slow down and have a real moment with each other kind of thing. And I actually felt for those characters throughout the whole thing. All of them. I love all the characters. The thing I will kind of push back a little bit on is 2005, 2006, 2007, they actually tried to do storytelling. Most Wanted has a story about cops and robbers and blah, 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 and street racers and how you're supposed to be the most wanted and you get away and you end up going to Need for Speed Carbon. So they did try doing storytelling. There was another game that they did, Need for Speed Undercover, which I think would make a really cool movie if they did it. And again, the movies...
Wasn't that just the first Fast and the Furious movie?
And that was way before this movie. What were they on? But yeah, they were about to... In 2015, they released Fast 7, or Furious 7, technically. But... no, I mean, they did... Yeah, you're technically right, generally. The early Need for Speed games did not have storytelling, but they did try to inject some storytelling as time went on. But again, Need for Speed is a franchise that they want to split. 1 year a game could be your standard cops and racers and whatever, like I said, with Most Wanted or Carbon or Undercover. And another year it'll be Need for Speed Pro Street or Need for Speed Underground or something, and it'll be something slightly different. I hope they stay away from the Pro Street stuff, because like I said, if I want track racing, I'll go to Gran Turismo. And I don't think anybody could pay me any amount of money for me to watch the Gran Turismo movie. That's something that didn't need to be made.
And I've heard amazing things about it.
Really?
Things about it. No, I've heard nothing but everybody being slightly surprised about how good it was. Well, I might have to just go watch it now just out of spite.
Tune in next week, folks.
I'm going to be really, you know, forward in this of the fact that I don't like racing games. I've never liked racing games. The only racing game series or franchise I've ever been a big fan of, it was Burnout, because loved crashing cars, loved causing destruction. And quite frankly, I kind of lost a little bit of the flair when it got out of the arcade style and it became an open world game. Most Wanted was a game that I bought. I had it on 360. And I will admittedly say the only reason I bought that game is it was when the Xbox 360 first came out and there was hardly any games out. And I was just craving something to play at the launch. So I tried Most Wanted. I enjoyed Most Wanted. I didn't enjoy it.
You did or you didn't?
I did. Okay. I enjoyed it for what it was, but mostly just because it bridged the gap until there was something actually interesting to play on the system.
Right. Which Most Wanted version did you have? The 2005 version?
It was whatever came out at launch with Xbox 360, so I believe it was the 05 version.
Okay, good, because I've tried watching videos of the 2012 version, and I'm like, this is no. Overall, like I said, the movie does have its flaws, but at the end of the day, I really dig it.
I think you're way too nice. You're
Well, we don't have to be completely cruel about it. Like this isn't the big bad movie show or anything. Like it, movies don't have to be bad. They can be good. We can enjoy them. And if they are bad movies, people can enjoy bad movies.
No, and like I said, this movie is completely, it's watchable. Like, and it has some good, there's some good fun to it. It is not, it's not a thinker. It's very much a movie that you could toss it in the background and you get what you need out of it. It's not one you really got to be super into, but it is, I mean, it's one of those things. You can't help but think of a racing movie that comes out in any, is just trying to capture that, the crowd from the Fast and the Furious movies, and they're like, you know, people like these Fast and the Furious movies. If we make this will be a home run type of a thing. Like, that's kind of the mentality that I assume the studio has when they buy up an IP like this, is, hey, we can make it like the Fast and the Furious movie. I was like, I'm very disappointed, because I did get confused that there was no mention about family and doing things for family.
Well, they did mention they were doing it for Pete, and Pete was his little brother.
So it was basically a rejected Fast and the Furious script, and they replaced family with the word Pete.
Yeah. Oh, man. And when you say the soundtrack, you're specifically meaning the artist songs. You're not talking about the actual score, because
Tour's I love fine. It. Yeah, it scores completely fine. I'm talking about any of the artist songs are just, they feel just a little out of place. They feel like they don't connect with the original material. It just doesn't. Yeah, the covers are bad. The covers are just really bad.
Which, as I said before, is weird, because EA had, like, this wasn't like EA gave somebody the keys to the kingdom and said, here, go do whatever. They were involved in this, as far as I know, and they got licensed songs for the games all the time. I don't understand. Like, was I mean, I know Aerosmith is Aerosmith, don't get me wrong, but I mean, were they rat? Like, what do we have to weigh? Aerosmith versus Jesse Pinkman. Aerosmith, Jesse Pinkman. I don't know. But yeah, no. I still dig this movie. I am surprised. And again, this movie was not a failure. This movie may be a failure in some people's eyes as far as the product that it was, but financially, this movie, $203 million off of a $66 million budget? I mean, that's a success in my eyes, obviously. I'm surprised they haven't tried to, like, what I would like to see them do is adapt other game versions. Now, I don't need, like, a whole Need for Speed franchise or anything, but if they're going to, like I said, if they're going to adapt Need for Speed Undercover, that's, again, your standard cops and robbers and undercover, still like it's kind of like a cop procedural movie kind of thing. If they did that, that would be cool, but I'm perfectly fine with this being the only one. That's fine. It doesn't, you know, not every movie needs a sequel, and this movie had an ending. Would I like to see more with these characters? Yes, because I think all the characters and all the acting that was done in the movie was really good. However, I don't need to, because I'm at the point now where I am sequel, reboot, and whatever else you want to say about future film type stuff, I'm getting tired. Like, I really miss the age of the single movie, which I view this as a single film. Like, again, like I said, would I like to see more with Toby in the future? Yeah, sure. I don't think it's ever going to happen because this movie is 10 years old. They haven't done another Need for Speed film since then. But the age that we currently live in, we have lived through two different DC universes, because I still count the 80s into the 90s one. And then obviously you have the Snyderverse. Obviously the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We've got all the Harry Potter films. We've got this. We live in an age where the cinematic universe must be the end-all, be-all thing. And I'm over here screaming with my tiny voice saying, like, seriously, there's nothing wrong with doing a single film with beginning, middle, and end story. Those films are really great. We grew up on those. Like, no one ever expected a Top Gun sequel. We got one eventually, but no one really expected it, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? So, but yeah. Okay, so we grade on a 0 to 5 scale with half points. And would you recommend this to people?
Oh man, Christmas came early, Wingnuts.
The thing you gotta understand is, racing is an art. Racing with passion. Dude, that's high art.
Sure, yeah. I mean, if you like racing movies, there's about 20 better ones I can think of, maybe 30, but it's watchable. And it's like I said, if you like Michael Keaton or Rami Malek, I was like, it's definitely worth watching for them alone. I mean, if you want to really see a movie that's directed by the guy who did stunts for Biker Boys, I mean, go for it. Gotta love that Kid Rock vehicle with Lawrence Fishburne in it. So, yeah, I was like, so you said scale of 1 to 5?
0 to 5 with half zero points. Five. You can use half points if you want.
I'd say it's a 3. It's not quite like in the middle. It's a little bit better than kind of, you know, an okay movie. Because it's got a little bit of star power to it, and it's got some really good, like I said, there's a great sequence kind of in the middle of the movie with the racing with the souped up Ford in the downtown area, and that race is alone, I think, kind of worth the watch, especially with Rami Malek stripping naked and, you know, running through an office, even though, despite the fact that there's a very awful rendition of Back in the Saddle Again being played in the background during that sequence. Besides that, that sequence is great. But I was like, yeah, it's watchable. I wouldn't say it's the best racing movie I've ever seen. It's not the worst movie I've ever seen, but it's very... By today's standards, it is watchable. So,
all right. So you're going to give it a 3. I love this movie, but I'm going to be objective and say that, yes, I see the flaws in it. However, I can overlook those. I know a lot of people may not be able to, but I am going to give it a 3.5, which is just slightly better. On our scale, 3 is, I think, average, and 3.5 is, like, good or something. I can overlook the flaws in the movie because I really enjoy the damn thing, but I'm not going to sit here and give it a 5 out of 5. I can't honestly do that. I would love to be able to sit here and say, yeah, it's a 5 out of 5, no matter what. Unfortunately, I can't, because I do see some of the stuff that is wrong with it. But, you know, like I said before, everybody likes bad movies or movies that people think are bad or whatever else. Any other thoughts on the movie itself or the musical score, not the soundtrack itself?
The one thing I will say, and I don't know why all of a sudden this just came to mind about the movie, was the fact that the absolute complete disregard for other human beings that are driving in this movie while they are doing their races, I did find a little astounding while I was watching. The amount of collateral damage in this movie does feel a little gratuitous. Which I was like, even in the Fast and the Furious movies, like, that's never struck me as a chord before. And I think it's a lot because of more of the lower stakes of it's just racing in this movie. But for some reason, the amount of damage to innocent bystanders that happened in this movie was like, almost was a little... I also have kids that have just started learning to drive and are on the road now, so maybe that could have something to do with it. But it was just like, holy crap, man. I was like, they don't give two shits about who they hurt or cause damage to, which to me felt a little, made it a little heartless. When it's a video game, it's fine because it's a simulation. But when it's a movie, it's a little more real worldy to it. And it adds an element that it was one of those that I didn't expect to have kind of an adverse reaction to. But I definitely had a little bit of an adverse reaction to that.
He's raising the next generation of street racers, folks. The only scene I can think of is the bus. And then the guy on the bicycle, when they just literally like zoom right past him. They never touch him. They don't bump into him or anything else. But like, they are so close to him when they race by him on the bike, when he's on the bike.
There is a sequence where they jump the car off the expressway.
Yep.
And when they do that, all the cops slam on their brakes behind them, and then you literally see traffic behind them, all like 12 cars all crash and convulse over top of each other. And I was just looking at that and I go, that was really unnecessary. there was no reason for that at all. That seems weird. So,
but they were, so in that scene, they were speeding up to make that jump. They made the jump, they didn't touch any cars.
Yeah, I know. I'm not faulting them. I'm faulting the fact that all the cops stopped with plenty of time with no incidents, but everybody behind the cops all crashed it. Like, none of them even crashed into a cop car. They'll crash into each other. There's no reason for it. It made no sense to me.
This reminds me of a number of years ago when my late wife and I, Karen, we were living out in Washington State. We were living in Vancouver, Washington, and we lived downtown. And our apartment complex was, and I don't mind saying this because I don't live there anymore. I'm in Indiana now. I've been in Indiana for 2 years. It was at the precipice, the corner, the ending street, whatever you want to say, 8th Street and Franklin. Franklin was the street that came down, and Franklin was a downhill street, kind of like San Francisco. Okay. Every weekend in the summer, they would have the farmer's market, and basically they would block off, because where the apartment complex was, it was right next to a park and everything else. They would block off our street, 8th Street, which means on the downhill, as you're coming down to the traffic light to stop in front of the building in front of 8th Street, you can't turn left. You have to turn right. Well, I actually have video proof of this. It's on Facebook. This is hilarious. I would watch these cars, and this one weekend, this one car would just stop. Like, he stopped at the stop sign like you're supposed to, but he just stayed stopped. And everybody else behind him just all stopped. It was a whole line, and I'm like, can you guys not see that he stopped completely? Like, he didn't have his engine turned off, but and I'm like, go around him, or dude in the front, go, turn, do something. Like, you can hear me clearly in the video. Like, what in the hell are these people doing? These people really know how to drive? Like, seriously? And then, as I pan the camera up in the shot, the people further up on 8th Street on other intersections way up there, they would actually just back up and go around other side streets. I'm like, oh my God, you people, just turn right already. Yeah. Need for Speed. It is what it is, folks. I don't know. It is what it is. And, I mean, 30 years of that franchise. I don't know. I'm trying to see here. Are they doing any, like, I noticed that they have a lot of canceled games, but I don't know if they're actually doing anything current with, like, the last one that was released was Need for Speed Unbound in 2022. Need for Speed 64 was canceled back in the 90s. A lot of, like, concept games got canceled. Like, they were going to do Need for Speed 10, Terror 5. They were going to do Need for Speed Millionaire. Oh my God, Need for Speed Millionaire? Really? Seriously? God.
Yeah, Millionaire. Woo-woo. I just imagine it's all 24-karat gold cars.
Yeah, I guess. Need for Speed Mobile, known as Need for Speed Assemble in China. It's upcoming free-to-play open-world racing mobile game developed by Team
Like, Studios. Yeah, the last game, Unbound, was the last one that came out from Criterion and Codemasters, and that was in 2022.
Yeah. And I hope they make a comeback. I mean, you would think that they would want to do something this year.
Well, I mean, and it seems to be development cycle for the game seems to be that they kind of release in a... consistently they've had something come out every 2 to 3 years.
Yep.
So it was like, it seems like, yeah.
Well, yeah, because so this is the interesting thing about the game franchise being 30 years old. From 97, Need for Speed 2, 97, 98, 99, 2000, those were all whatever. And then they started doing they did the 2-year break between 2000, 2002, and then 03, 04, 05, 06. But the thing about that is, starting in 06, 07, they just kind of, they rotated every year. So Need for Speed Carbon was 06, Pro Street was 07, Undercover was 08. And I love the Need for Speed Undercover score, the musical score to Need for the game. I love video game soundtracks. I love the video game score stuff. That is so cool to me. But yeah, I don't know what they're going to do, if anything. I hope they do something. Like I said, it's the 30th anniversary of the franchise, but you never know, I guess.
I'm gonna put my hot take out there. I really don't give a shit if they ever do it.
That's not really a hot take. That's just an opinion. And opinions are like assholes. Everybody's got one, and it's okay. I'm not allowing you to have your opinion. I don't want people here listening to this saying, "Oh my God, Mike is not allowing Art to have an." No, that's not it. I don't believe in the hot take thing. I just don't. Opinions are like assholes. Everybody's got one. Some people have opinions that align with each other. Some people don't have opinions that align with each other. And if you don't care, because you've already said in this episode that racing games really aren't your thing, hey, you know, you can go enjoy something that you actually will enjoy. That's fine. I'm just saying, you would think, being the 30th anniversary of the franchise, something would be done. And like I said, supposedly the mobile game is supposed to be coming out at some point this year, but we're already in. Well, by the time this episode airs, it's either going to be late September, early October. We got 3.5 to 4 months left in the year. Who knows? I don't know. I just wish there was.
I think their big release for the year was going to be Need for Speed Mobile, but
probably, and that's fine. That's fine. Hey, you know, gaming has changed from 30 years ago to now, obviously. I mean, I see people playing not mods, but versions of like Call of Duty and stuff on mobile phone, like actual smartphone. I'm like, holy crap. It's not obviously the full game graphics, but it's good enough kind of thing for the phone screens. But I don't know.
I was going to say someone's getting enough time with their video game systems thanks to their kids, so they play on their phone more than anything else, because that's what we got.
Okay. So since this is a video game-centric episode, I'm going to throw it to an ad break for some podcast ads. We're going to come back, and we're going to have a final little discussion here on a certain game company that decided to go pro. So we'll be back right after this.
Man, I can feel love and vengeance. Smell motor oil all swirling together out there. We got supernatural Mustangs. We got personal vendettas. I have no idea where this is going. I just know I like it. I like it a lot.
Fall in. Defend yourself.
Everyone knows my story.
Go ahead.
Monarch, this is the blonde female sitting right next to Toby Marshall.
Really?
Okay. Hey, we got a girl with a fake British accent claiming she's sitting next to Toby Marshall.
Having a spot to tell you all you'd love.
There were three cars in the race the day that Pete died. That's a fact. And anyone that says that Toby is responsible for Pete's death, answer this. Why jump parole in New York knowing that you are going to be rearrested and do serious time unless you are innocent and hell-bent to right a wrong? He did the time. He paid the debts. Why would he risk it?
Next time you talk to Dino, you can ask him that question.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I like this girl. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the British are coming. I gotta tell you, I'm moved. I am. And the whole thing just went right here to the old ticker. And I think I gotta pop one of these. Yeah. This is getting good.
I believe you, you crazy little tart.
Hello, geeks and geekettes! Looking for a podcast that covers a vast array of topics? Then check out Altered Geek Unleashed, where we discuss our thoughts on this week's geeky news, tech, gaming, television shows, movies, cartoons, comics, and more. So, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks, every Friday on the GeekCast Radio Network.
Hey Jared, I have this idea for a new show for the network.
What is it?
You know how I liked the 1990s comic book series, The New Warriors?
Yeah, yes, yes, yep.
And you know how at the Long Boss Crusade we're trying to get the YouTube channel going?
Yes, also correct.
Well, thanks. So, how about you and me do a live stream show about The New Warriors? You've never read the books before, and I have them, and so that's a great setup. We could give it a catchy name, like Come Out to Play. Don't you think that's the greatest idea?
Sure, Delvin, that's a great idea. Just one question.
Yeah?
Why do you have me dangling off this ledge, holding me by only one arm?
Oh, yeah. Well, you'll get it soon, I hope. Come Out to Play, a New Warriors podcast, comes to you live on YouTube every second Tuesday of the month at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Long Box Crusade channel. If you can't watch it there, we replay them on the Long Box Crusade Network podcast feed, available anywhere podcasts can be found. We invite you to come along for the ride, or in other words, New Warriors, come out to play, yay!
Hi, I'm Terry Smith, the host of Music Talks, the podcast where I ask guests a simple but beguiling question. Choose a song from each decade of your life and tell me why these songs mean so much to you. Guests and listeners love this format, and if you want to find out why, then take a listen at musictalkspod.buzzsprout.com or use your favourite podcast app. Just search on Music Talks Terry Smith. If you'd like to be a guest on the show and... then send me a tweet at Music Talks Pod. I look forward to doing some music talking soon.
Do you like the Transformers?
Yes.
Do you like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Cowabunga!
Do you like IDW Comics?
And comic book podcasts?
Then come check out Ninjas and Bots. Each week, we look at an issue of Transformers
or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from their IDW Comics incarnation. We drop episodes every Saturday morning.
Just like the cartoons we loved as a kid. The show can be found on your favorite podcatcher and at johnreadscomics.com.
See you then.
Do you know John Hiatt songs?
Maybe you know them from being covered by Roseanne Cash, Three Dog Night, The Neville Brothers, Emmylou Harris, Eric Clapton, B.B. King, Jeff Healey, Bonnie Raitt, or literally hundreds of others.
Maybe you have some of his albums on your shelf, or in your cow-horned Cadillac right now.
I'm Jesse Jackson.
And I'm Sylvan Groff.
And we're going to dive in from A to Z. Join us on the Perfectly Good Podcast.
We're going to discuss all of your favorites and uncover some forgotten gems. From Aces Up Your Sleeve to Zero House.
Rate and debate every John Hiatt song on the Perfectly Good Podcast. Have a little faith.
We brought the entire convention center to the brink of an intergenre geek war.
Okay, Michael, if we're going to tackle this podcast thing, we've got to do something really special. It has to be cool, daily, in audio form, and undetectable by radar. Something that screams summer. I know, let's do a Phineas and Ferb review podcast. We'll call it the Podcast Organization Without a Cool Acronym, or PALCA for short. What do you think?
I think if we're not careful, Candace is going to bust us.
You can find PALCA on the Geekcast Radio Network, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and all of the other methods you find podcasts.
We'll give you the whole seat, but you'll only need the edge.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Car. Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
Man, I can feel love and vengeance. Smell motor oil all swirling together out there. We got supernatural Mustangs. We got personal vendettas. I have no idea where this is going. I just know I like it. I like it a lot.
Fall in. Defend yourself.
Everyone knows my story.
Go ahead.
Monarch, this is the blonde female sitting right next to Toby Marshall.
Really? Okay. Hey, we got a girl with a fake British accent. Claiming she's sitting next to Toby Marshall.
Having a spot to tell you all you'd love.
There were three cars in the race the day that Pete died. That's a fact. And anyone that says that Toby is responsible for Pete's death, answer this. Why jump parole in New York knowing that you are going to be rearrested and do serious time unless you are innocent and hell-bent to right a wrong? He did the time. He paid the debts. Why would he risk it?
Next time you talk to Dino, you can ask him that question.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I like this girl. Yeah. Yeah!
Yeah, the British are coming. I gotta tell you, I'm moved.
I am.
And the whole thing just went right here to the old ticker. And I got to pop one of these.
Yeah.
This is getting good. I believe you, you crazy little tart.
All right, folks, we are back here inside Studio 2009, and since this is a video game episode, we are also going to be doing a future anniversary episode on PlayStation, because PlayStation, Sony PlayStation, is also turning 30 years old this year. 1994 was the first PlayStation release, and this year they announced the PS5 Pro with a price tag of $700. What are they doing, Art?
Well,
we don't know, right?
They're trying to give you the best in class for your ultimate consumption of high end. I don't know. I
he lost it, folks. He lost it.
Yeah, it was one of those. It's one of those. My PS5 plays just fine with what I want to do with it. I do not need to upgrade to a Pro system, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
So it's slightly taller, and it's got like fins on it. It's like racing stripes. So that's how you know it can go faster, because it's got racing stripes. That's all I got.
God. That's exactly like Tron Legacy. So what's the difference between NCOM, Flynn OS 12 and blah, blah, blah? Oh, we put a 12 on the box this year. I'm like, oh my God.
I will say that they did unveil today, a couple hours ago when we're recording this, they did unveil the 30th anniversary edition of the PS5 and the PS5 Pro. I will say the nostalgia color schemes are kind of cool. But once again,
are they $700 cool?
Oh, no. Hell no. Especially when the plates snap off the side and I can customize it to however I want it to. But that's, I mean, I have black plates on mine and I did a red stripe decal in the middle so it matches everything I have in my setup. So mine's already custom to how I want it to look, and I do not need that from them. I may potentially purchase a, 30th anniversary edition controller, but
yeah,
that's about it. So yeah,
that's about it.
I mean,
I don't know.
I guess the biggest change with the Pro is it's got the modular disk drive in it.
Is it the PS5 Pro disk drive version and non-disk drive? Like, I hated that they did that. I was like, no.
I think they were trying it out because Xbox did the exact same thing where they just had the digital version. And it was like, the whole thing was like the price point to me, like, because I even eyeballed buying an Xbox and I didn't want to, but because they signed that contract essentially with Bethesda, I really want to play Starfield.
Really?
I'm a Fallout guy, and if the new Fallout games are only coming out on Xbox, it's gonna have to happen at some point in time. but I was like, I was convinced to potentially go with just the digital only version,
mm-hmm.
but I don't. The issue is the fact I have a 4K Dolby Atmos system at my house, and why am I going to buy something that can only output in 1080p?
Yeah. Just
have the digital version of it. So it's one of those, like, to me, like, if you have the setup that involves highlighting performance, I understand paying more for something that ultimately gives you that ultimate performance. I was like, that's going to be the big, because I was like, I know with the Pro, like, so the pluses of the Pro for somebody that like has the setup for it,
mm-hmm.
this isn't going to be somebody who's going to go and like, I got my Vizio TV, I'm going to go buy a PS5 Pro. It's not that, I mean, that's not the investment. Those are not the people they're chasing after. They're chasing after the stupid people like me who have a Dolby Atmos theater system that they play their video games on, who have their giant 4K, who are potentially investing in 8K technology. Like, that's what they're going after with this. They're not going after the casual gamer. They're going after the bougie ones with this thing. Because I was like, it's got enhanced graphics and more ray tracing. But I was like, I think I've seen some of the side-by-side videos, and I was just like, I'm not really seeing how, like, some of the side-by-sides are better, but I was like, I've also very casually looked at this. I really haven't gotten super in-depth on it. So I was like, I'm sure it's worth the money if you're going from a performance, like, melt-your-eyeball standards and you have the setup for it, but if it's one of those things, if you're playing on, like, a 24-inch TV and your mattress sits on the floor and you don't even have the ability to afford a box spring, or something that keeps your mattress off the floor, this is probably not for you guys, which is fine. So I feel like I just made this a very classist argument, and that was not my intention. No,
you're not wrong. I mean, honestly, I agree with you. Like, if you have the $700, the investment would be 8 Sleep or Purple Mattress or something with a, you know, adjustable base or something like that. Coming from someone who, when was 2019? 5 years ago? 5.5 years ago? I got through credit at the time. I paid it off finally, thank God, a couple of years ago. But we got purple mattresses with adjustable bases, and we basically turned into a Craftmatic couple and everything like that. And I still have mine because, unfortunately, Karen passed in 2021. And I'm now living in the glorious state of Indiana. Barf. And yeah, I use the like, yeah, absolutely. But that's an investment. A $700 investment in a video game system when you don't have a place to sleep or an actual bed to sleep on that isn't on the floor, that's not an investment.
It's one of those. If you're going in and you're investing in 8K technology and you want 4K at 60 frames per second, this is something you want to be a part of your setup. If those aren't things that are ringing any bells with you, there's zero point to invest in buying a PS Pro. I was like, one of the big things that they're talking about is being features. It's got more storage. I was like, yeah, I put a multiple terabyte storage device attached to mine. So I was like, it's a boutique-y system for a very high-end entertainment system is what it is. They're chasing a very specific, and the big thing for them is they probably developed this specifically to market towards and have content towards their 8K TVs that are coming out.
Yeah.
This is all a marketing ploy, ladies and gentlemen. This is probably something specifically to show off the 8K technology that Sony's been bringing out. Because broadcast standard TV cannot show off what they're developing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the funny thing is, and I've mentioned this on the show before, folks, but Art hasn't been here long enough yet to realize this because I don't think he's listened to a lot of the other episodes. But in 2018, Karen wanted a new laptop. I wanted a 55-inch television for the bedroom that we had at the time. She got her laptop for Christmas, and I got my, at the time, I know you're going to scoff at this, but at the time, that's what it was. It was a brand sharp 55-inch 4K HDTV. I wanted to future-proof that for as long as I could. So I've had a 4K television since 2018.
Yeah, it was like I'm almost afraid to go into what I have invested in my theater room. So.
Oh, that's a whole other podcast episode.
Yeah,
that's a whole other mess. Folks, Need for Speed, I still recommend it. I still think it's a good-ish movie. It does have its flaws, like we said, but like Art said, it's watchable. I don't necessarily think it's background watchable for me personally, because it's a movie where if I want to watch it, I will stop everything. I will turn off Facebook. I will put my phone on Do Not Disturb, and I will watch the movie because I enjoy it that much, but that's just me and I'm crazy.
You know, I was going to make the bold statement of saying that I would never, ever watch this movie again. but now that I'm thinking about it, this is perfect cannon fodder for me and all the guys that I went to film school with. We like to get together and get trashed and watch three movies, and we typically like to put something in the mix that's kind of terrible so we can make fun of it the entire time. This would be a great candidate for that movie of something that we throw in there we make fun of the entire time. So I may watch this again.
The Geekcast Radio Network does not endorse the opinions of Arthur Danner on this podcast.
That's fair.
No. I mean, sure, fine. Hey, as long as people watch the movie, you know, and whatever you get out of it, you get out of it. I mean, hey, you know. But the funny thing is, I've seen the movie so many times in the last 10 years, I almost did not watch it today before the recording because I know it so well. But I did, actually. I listened to the soundtrack this morning, and I watched it this afternoon just to make sure I remembered everything I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, and I think I was watching this, and I was messaging you while I was watching it four days ago and just bitching up a storm the entire time. And I was just like... I was like, how dare you ask me to watch this movie?
Oh,
I'm making it sound worse than it was. It was not. Like I said, I gave it a 3 for God's sakes. It's not that bad. It's just, yeah.
It's just the quote unquote art of me asking him to do anything at this point. Like, oh my God, you want me to watch what? Mario Brothers.
I think it was more so halfway through the movie. I go, why did I agree to do this episode with you?
But we still had fun.
Yes, we did.
Absolutely. All right, folks. Art will be back in the future or the past as his Gamer Origins is episode 98. Coming up next time, we've got Boba Fett season 1 and Mandalorian season 3 with my buddy David Draper because he's doing the 12 months of Star Wars with me. So that's the next episode for episode 95 of the show. 96 is supposed to be Mission Impossible. The what I'm calling the McQuarrie missions, so Mission 5, 6, and 7, the Christopher McQuarrie mission movies for Mission Impossible. I don't know if that's going to happen yet, because apparently my buddy DJ doesn't really check his Facebook Messenger all that often, so he keeps saying to me, I always keep forgetting to check these when you send them. I'm like, well, how can you forget if you have the notifications turned on? I don't know. It is what it is. Episode 97 will be a podcast approach, 30 episodes. Wow. Wake up, Mike. 30 questions all about listening to or producing podcasts. My buddy Jesse Jackson from Set Lusting Bruce and Perfectly Good Podcast, and he does a couple other podcasts as well, will be here to answer the questions. Thank you for joining us here inside Studio 2009. If you'd like to get in contact with us to leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where it's all new all the time, where you can listen to and comment on all the content that we produce. You can send any email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. You can check us out on all the podcatching clients that are out there. I prefer Spotify, but that's just me. You can follow us on Twitter. Yes, it is Twitter, damn it. At geekcastradio for the network, at It's Studio 2009 for the show. I am at TF2 and Mike. You still Xing or no?
I mean, I'm there. I'm still, okay. I'm Art of AV on Twitter.
Okay. Yes, at Art of AV on Twitter for art. Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCast Radio Network. And you can also check out Studio 2009 Podcast over there as well. Anything else? You got anything you want to promote? Anything you're doing? Anything you're working on?
No.
Okay. No way.
Nothing to promote here.
Not yet. We'll figure it out, folks. I'll put him to work eventually. I won't pay him, but I'll put him to work. For now, I am TF2 and Mike with
our Danner.
You'll hear us back in the studio soon.
The hits just keep on coming with you, huh?
Fun fuck. Yay!
I almost said, you're going to put me to work and not pay me? What, are we married now? What the hell?
No. That would be blasphemous.
Ha ha ha!